Welcome to the 35th United We Stand podcast of the season. Our special guest today is David May. David played for United in the 90s and into the noughties. He signed from Blackburn Rovers in 1994. Played 118 times for United, scoring 8 goals. Thanks for joining us over Easter, David.
All right, mate. You okay?
Yeah, fine. Are you? What are you up to?
Just chilling, really. Just woke up. So, half nine.
Well, we've invited readers to put questions to you, so okay. don't blame me if you don't like any of the questions. The first one is quite an important one. Would you rather be bummed by a horse and nobody knew, or not be bummed by a horse and everyone thought you had been?
Would I be bummed by a horse and nobody knew?
Yeah. Or not, or not been bummed by a horse, and yet everyone thought you had been.
Oh, I would rather neither, obviously.
But you got to choose one.
All right. Yeah, go on then. I'm bummed by a horse. Nobody knew. Who's maybe the way I'd walk later on, I'd probably give it away.
Who's the best forward you ever marked?
Ian Rush was my first early lesson, played him in the FA Cup for Blackburn, I think it was at 18, 19. Played at Ewood Park and managed a 1-1 draw with Mark Atkins scoring in the 92nd minute, I think it was, an own goal. And Ian Rush never got kicked that game. And I took him back to Anfield and he gave me a lesson. I think he scored 2 and he ripped the back out of me.
Why?
My first. Just his movement and his He was in his prime, and as I say, you know, you can't give forwards that amount of time, and he was incredible. Alan Shearer, obviously, I'd loved Al to come to United. I think United maybe would have won more things, but that's all hypothetical because had Shearer to come, would he have fitted in with Eric and Coley and all those other people? Debatable, but Shearer was a fantastic forward as well, especially when he was a black man.
I know when we spoke about Shearer in the past, there's sort of been a jokey element with your song about him, you winning more medals than him and that. Maybe that's overlooked the fact that he was a properly world-class striker, wasn't he?
Oh, I mean, you look at his record, 260 Premier League goals, and then you look at the next one down, it's Coley.
Yeah.
And he's quite a bit away. And, you know, I had quite a few injuries in his career, Coley too, but, you know, considering the teams they both played in, you know, Al was really a one-man team. He could score out of anything, whereas Coley's a little bit more of a team player. But United always created chances. But to get 260 goals is an incredible achievement.
One mitigating factor for Coley was he never took penalties.
Well, yeah, and free kicks as well. And seeing him in the Masters and things like that, you can actually understand why, because he's absolutely been useless.
You play with him a lot in the Masters, don't you?
Yeah, we've got one coming up in Malaysia on the, I think it's the 22nd, 23rd of April, but we go out there on the, I think it's the 18th, we go out there. We've got a Qatar flight, I think Viv's on it, so that'll be good fun. David Johnson, Ronnie, Coley. Clayton, Lee Martin, so got a half decent team going out there this year, so it should be good.
And there's one in Barbados, which United are the champions. The Barbados Legends has been played twice.
Double champions get that in.
Exactly, your United won it both times.
Yeah, I missed the second one because I was over in Malaysia doing the Masters. But yeah, the first one was a great tournament. They had. Well, we beat Chelsea in the final, and they were all expected to be. As had Zola, Di Matteo,
Poyet, Hasselbank,
Jimmy Floyd,
They had Cudicini in goal. Chelsea had a brilliant side.
Yeah, but that United togetherness, that United going out the night before, having a few beers, having a crack, coming in at 3 o'clock in the morning, then getting up playing golf. And then go and play in the tournament.
And winning it. But I saw Cole's the captain and how serious he was about winning it. And he wasn't joking. He's like, it was like he was still playing. He's like, this is Chelsea. We've still got a rivalry with him. He was blanking Di Matteo, just ignoring him.
And the bus, yeah.
He's properly taking it seriously.
He does. And I suppose rightly so, all right, you can have a little bit of a fun. But, yeah, I think, Andy, when you cross that white line and you get into it, the last thing you want to do is lose, especially to Chelsea. Mm. You know, they came in, everyone probably was expecting them to win. After the stand at the final was good in for Chelsea, but we didn't, and they were absolutely pig sick. They all went home and added a little bit of humble pie, whereas the lads just cracked on into the night.
Cracked on, would that be where Dwight York's walking round with a tray of drinks, buying everyone drinks all night?
You know what York is like, yeah. And Brian Lara.
And a girl coming up to Andy Cole and saying, "You're Andy Cole, can I have a picture of you?" and handing her camera to Ronnie Johnson, just completely blanking Ronnie, not recognising him. And to get revenge, Ronnie zoomed the camera in, not on Cole and the girl, but straight into the girl's teeth, took the picture and just ran away and hid behind a pillar.
That's Ronnie Fair. That's the Iceman. Yeah, definitely. Ooh. I spoke to Ronnie the other day and like I said, he's coming out into the Masters as well, so it's good to have the Iceman there with us.
One of the questions later down is Ruud van Nistelrooy or Andy Cole? I might as well ask you that now while we're talking about him.
For banter, for dressing room and stuff like that, definitely Cole. Cole is a great lad in the dressing room. People, if you don't know Cole, you would think he might be arrogant or anything like that. But Cole is a great lad to have in the dressing room. Forever ripping the bit. Out of everybody. Great sense of humour. But on the pitch, two different players. I mean, Reed had never scored out of the box, did he? So, good question. On his day, Coley, but overall, probably Reed.
Was a game where you were playing and you've conceded a goal and you thought, well, I won't repeat the swear words in this, effing hell, that was some strike.
Yes, David Ginola, 5-0 at Newcastle. He cut inside, lashed into the top corner. And it's one of those things, you know what, fair play to you. You've done it. And you can't do anything about it. You just have to sometimes admit, fair play to you, mate, that's a great strike. Although it does piss you off.
I was in the away end that day. We got the coaches back to Manchester. It seemed like the whole of Newcastle went out after the game just to wave us off.
Yeah. But I think we had the last laugh like that year, which is the main thing. I mean, I think that was back to back with Southampton as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Fenerbahce throwing in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Let alone goal off Maisie.
So that would have been the autumn of 96, but United won the league.
Yeah. That was one of those goals, I think. Especially the Fenerbahce, because he come off my heel.
Yeah.
And squirted over, and that's the first time United lost in Europe at home.
And Fenerbahce away, that was one of the maddest atmospheres ever. I remember them turning the floodlights out and the whole crowd lighting newspapers and holding them up. It looked like the stadium was on fire. It was frightening, but it was great at the same time.
Yeah. And that was where they had the big speakers at the back of the goals, wasn't it?
Yeah, but also the main speakers for the stadium. The game started and the main PA announcer was giving United abuse in Turkish while the game was on. And Sir Bobby Charlton went to see the UEFA delegate and said, you know, this can't be... the game's 15 minutes old. You're giving us abuse. And then I think someone had a word and it stopped. But yeah. What a mad, fantastic atmosphere. They had JJ Okocha as well, if I remember.
Pardon?
They had JJ Okocha.
JJ Okocha, yes, you're right, they did. And I think just after that, that's when I got my England call up, just after that. So, I might have been doing something all right that night. Glenn Hoddle was the pundit in there.
96 was your best year then? That was the year you've said in the past when you went up to the Riverside, won the league up there?
Yeah. Well, after that, 97 was a good year, but then after that, then I started picking up injuries and started going down a little bit then.
What was your best foul, another reader wants to know? Be it a kick up someone's arse, a cruncher, or a game saver?
Best foul?
Yeah.
I'd like any foul. As long as I didn't get up. As long as you got the ball, I'd look 50-50. 50-50, and you can get the player and the ball. Not in that order. Get the ball and then the player. There's nothing better. Nothing better than smashing somebody. It's a great feeling.
Is it?
Yeah. And then you get all the crowd behind you, and you're absolutely buzzing. You can't do it now.
You speak to foreign players, it's the one thing they pick out about the English game, because you see a tackle like that in Spain, it doesn't really get applauded, or in Italy or in Germany, but in England the fans absolutely love it. And you speak to a Spanish player, they can't believe it. They just say, I mean, they're not knocking it, they just think it's a very British English thing.
Well, it probably is. It's probably because of all the Germans and the Spanish and the Italians why it's been stopped. Because they're all around for 2 minutes after they've been smashed. Scusi's, I mean, the thing with I never really caught him, to be fair, but I always used to love a knee in the back. The lad would be waiting for it, and I'd sort of like clumsily stick my knee in the small of his back, and they go down, and it's like getting a dead ass, and there's nothing worse than a dead ass because you just cannot run, and they generally have to go off. And Scholes used to say to us, "Amazing, fucking give him a dead arm. Give him a dead arm. Get that knee up." It'd be brilliant. Just took a, and you reminded me then. You just brought back a little memory then.
And who did you give a dead arse to? Who can you remember?
I can't give it to anybody.
Yeah.
Who I tried but I missed was in Chappistan, was it? In Dortmund at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried doing him, but I just missed him. But he was causing us all sorts of trouble. Anyone who really causes trouble, Scholes would give the little nod and say, "Hey, go on then, give him the knee in the back." Scholes used to love it.
If you could have got away with a snide dig, another reader wants to know, Suarez style, on any opponent, who would it have been?
Ben Five.
Why?
All day long. I just think he's a fucking horrible little person.
Still?
I don't know, Andy. And the funny thing is that he's over in the Masters in April. So it's different, isn't it, when you see people.
Yeah.
People do wind up on pitches. Suarez, yes, I would love to give him a dig. Joey Barton, might be another. Just people who don't respect the game sort of thing. Most don't respect it, but sneakily they can get away with things, or they think they can get away with things. So I'm looking forward to next month, meeting Dennis White. He's probably a really, really nice lad.
It's a strange one, and the reason I say still is because I went to a tournament last year to get an interview with him, and flew across the Atlantic to get an interview with him, and met him one morning in an hotel, introduced myself. He was absolutely sound. And I said, you know, 442 magazine, we want to do an interview with you. And he just went, "I'll stop you there, I'm not doing it." He said, "There's nothing personal." He said, "I'm just not doing it." And it was a really strange thing, because it's a respectable football magazine. Normally, everyone wants...
Is it Ben Five?
Yeah, everyone wants to be in there. You know, and the biggest names, you know, your Messies, and just said, "I'm not doing it." And I said, "Why?" Yeah. I said, "Do you mind if I ask him why?" He said, "No, I'm not going to say." And it was really weird, because on one level he was fine. And on another, he's just, and I'm told that's just what he's like. You know, he has his own set of rules. And I know lads who've played with him who have, some people really like him, some people don't. It clearly sort of divides people.
Yeah. Well, it's divided me on the other side, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure it'll change. I'm sure he's a decent lad, but on the pitch, just a horrible little person.
Yeah. I think he's had a lot of libel action, court action, litigation in the last couple of years. I think he was badly stung by what happened at Newcastle. I don't think that's sorted out yet. He's probably been advised not to speak to anyone and say anything. So, and you know, I saw him with his former teammates, clearly very popular at Chelsea, although he left there in dodgy circumstances. But anyway, we're here to speak to you, not about Dennis Wise. The next reader wants to know, bit of a bizarre one this, what's your favourite golf club?
Favourite golf club? 58 Degree Lobodge.
You're a decent golfer, aren't you?
I'm all right, yeah.
You're playing off what now?
I'm off 9, but I would probably say I should be off 7. It's only because I don't play in the competitions at my golf club. And that's really the only way you can get your handicaps down. But when I put my 3 cards in, I've always been 9. I was 9 at Hopwood in Middleton, which is Manchester Golf Course. Then I went to North Manchester. I was 9 there. I went to Blakely. I was 9 there. And now I'm back at North Manchester. And I need to put my 3 cards in. But I would say I'd be off about 7.
Who's the best former United player at golf?
I think you'd have to say Wiggy Clayton.
Yeah.
Although he's now a 5. He says he's a 5. Which is, no, I think he's a 4.5. So he's up to 5. He's certainly not a 5 player. If I'm a 7 player and he's a 5 player, we've never ever 2 shots between us.
Who else is good?
Coley on his day. Coley's a decent player. Left-hander, which would surprise a lot of people. He's right-handed, right-footed, but plays golf left-handed. Andy Ritchie, steady, very, very steady. Dennis smashes his 3-wood country mile. It's like a 1920s old wood Dennis has got. He's going to half smash it. Arthur's a good player, very good player. So we've got half a decent squad of players. I spoke to Robbie Fowler a few weeks ago. I'll speak to Robbie Fowler in Malaysia as well about trying, if we can, to get maybe a little bit of a Ryder Cup for charity, where you can have a team of 3 or maybe a team of 3 paying guests with an ex-United or Liverpool player, and have a little bit of a Ryder Cup tournament for a trophy or something to raise money for a charity. So I'll speak to Robbie Fowler over the next few weeks.
What's Robbie Fowler like?
Robbie's a great lad. Absolute great lad.
Everyone says that.
Yeah. Have you never interviewed him?
No.
Sound lad. Absolute belting lad. Really, really nice lad. It's surprising because obviously I've only ever played against him, but I've never ever been in his company. But Robbie's been to the Masters now for the last 3 years, I think. He's a belting lad. Him, Rob Jones, he's a great lad. Steve Harkness, Steve McManaman, all belting lads. Really, really top lads. They're the ones who I have respect for. There's a few more on that side that really do piss me off, but we'll leave that to another time.
McManaman said he'd grown up conditioned to hate Manchester United growing up in Liverpool, and he was really surprised with himself when he stopped playing and started playing the Vets tournaments that he actually liked you lads.
And it's exactly the same. Yeah, you grow up to hate Liverpool, and you do, even to the day. You know, any games between Man United and Liverpool, yeah, there's that hatred, and rightly so, it should always stay there. But as for the players, getting great. You know, there wouldn't be a problem in the next few weeks when I'm over there. But, you know, sometimes before when there were other players there, I'm not going to name the names, you'll know who they are. There's always an atmosphere. But with the likes of Robbie and Macca and Rob Jones, Steve Harkness, they love you in the company because it's just a good bit of crack, good bit of banter, and really, really enjoyable atmosphere.
What's it like playing again at Anfield as a Manchester United player?
Brilliant, because you've got 3,000 lads behind you and the rest of them hate you. But you're doing it for those 3,000 lads behind the goal, singing their hearts out every single minute. And you're buzzing. You're absolutely buzzing your tits off, because it is a hostile place to go to. You know, you know what's going on the streets as well. You know, you're aware of everything around you, the history, the traditions, the fighting that's gone on, the hatred. And to get one over them is a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant achievement and something that sticks with you. You love it.
Was starting in the 96 FA Cup final one of the highlights of your career?
Definitely, yeah. It's everybody's every footballer's boyhood dream, playing at Wembley in an FA Cup final. I just wish they would scrap the semi-finals at Wembley, because it's an absolute joke. Because it's
everyone going down there, paying a fortune, £150 day out.
Well, yeah, of course. It's not only that. Wembley's for finals. It shouldn't be for semi.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Villa Park. Imagine if Blackburn had beat Millwall and we beat Chelsea. You've got four North West teams there having to go all the way down to London. Two of them are going to have to do it twice. My mate's just booked his train ticket for him and his lad. His lad's 12-year-old. £126 each.
It's ridiculous.
Two train tickets. And if they get through to the final, which I hope they don't, then they've got to do it all again.
And it was like this in 94 when United played Oldham, and Oldham actually requested that it was played at Wembley because they would have received more money, and they didn't feel that they'd perhaps get past Manchester United. It boils down to money, sadly, and the travelling fans who go in, their concerns are secondary. The FA will make more out of 80,000, 90,000 at Wembley than they would with 41,000 being at Villa Park. And to hell with the logistics, because they're not making the journey down, because they're going from London to London.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree, mate. The FA have a lot to answer for, because they are. It's greed. I mean, anything to do with Wembley is an absolute joke. The cost of it, all the backenders that I'm sure everybody were getting, it's an absolute joke. And all they're doing is just lying in their own coffers. You know, they don't think of the lads who have to work week in, week out, and, you know, have to save just in the hope that they can get to Wembley.
I remember the price of things at Wembley. I remember in the 1990 Cup final being absolutely astounded. I think a Coke was £3.50, which in 1990 would be like...
yeah.
And I just remember saying to me, Dad, is that like a mistake? Or is it actually true? And now, I mean, the advice people, you speak to your bank manager before you go to Wembley and then get a loan out, and you can buy fish and chips and pay it off over 5 years. That's
it. It is
ridiculous. It's not like... It's
you
not
have to remortgage to go to Wembley.
It's not just a London price. It's even more. It's just so off the scale.
Yeah.
You mentioned Blackburn briefly. Does it sadden you, the current situation there?
Oh, it marks me, mate. Tell you. What them bankers are doing to that club. I mean, I can't just say it's a... Well, I can't say it's a bankers' fault, because they're the ones who bought into the club. I don't think they had any idea what anything was all about. You know, you've got the bankers there who thought that you could never get relegated. How naive is that? How clueless is that? Then they bring Sherry Singh in. And I've met Sherry a few times over in Malaysia. And he seems a nice, decent guy. But the global advisor for Blackburn, where have they plucked him from? I'm not saying he doesn't know anything about football, but he's never been in British football or anything like that. And I think it's. I feel so sorry for Jack, because I tell you what, he'll be rolling his grave thinking, what the hell is going on at my club? And it's that I worry about, because if they get relegated this year and they've got a good chance for doing that, I can't see him coming back for a long, long time, because no, the bankers aren't going to put any money in, because they don't do it now. And the way they're shipping out managers and coaches and everything like that, it's really, really worrying. Really worrying. I just hope the lads can sort it out. They get somebody in who can get them up the table. You know, to appoint Henning, to appoint Michael Appleton in the space of, 3 months, and give them 10 games each or something like that. It's an absolute joke.
It seems like a mess from the outside. I know people on the inside, and it's the stuff I hear, and I've got to be careful what I say. But obviously, a lot of people who are involved with Blackburn have been involved at United, or they live in Manchester. It's absolutely staggering what is going on there. And, you know, you played with Henning, you played with Michael. Michael's is a decent coach. He lost his job last week. He obviously can't speak, because when they lose the job, they can't say anything for 12 months. But tell you what, them lads have seen a lot, and they'll probably never see at other clubs what they've seen going on at Blackburn Rovers. It's a mess of a club.
It is a mess of a club. And do you blame? I mean, it all started with Venky's coming in, saying they're going to buy Ronaldinho, going to go for Kaká. And then when you see the prices that they're willing to pay for them, you think, well, that probably won't last 6-7 months of the wages, never mind for the transfer fees as well. They haven't a clue. They have not got a clue.
And it was a really good club. Winding back a decade, I went to interview Graham Souness there, and I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, but he said one thing to me which I'll never forget. He said, at every club I've worked at, there's always been other distractions. He said, at Blackburn Rovers, I'm allowed to concentrate on the football, and that is a great privilege for a manager. He said, it is such a well-run club. I think John Williams was there as the chief executive. Right. Yeah. He had a really good reputation, John Williams. Is it City now?
Yeah. Well, there you go. I'm surprised, isn't it?
And they've lost loads of other people. People who, it's never in the papers, you know, on the physio sides of it, the backroom staff. They've lost so many good people.
Yeah.
And that was a cracking club. And as you say, down to Jack Walker, you played there.
Well, that's it. I mean, you go back to when would it have been, about 88, something like that, 89, when Jack came in, started putting in the money. I remember him paying $3.3 million for share, and you're thinking, Jesus, you know, how much money is that? But, you know, he was willing to put that money in. You went on about, you know, how much coke was in 1990, £3.5 million. I mean, you think £3.5 million or £3.3 million was it for share?
Yeah.
Somebody on £10 grand a week. So, oh my, £10,000 a week. Are you mad? But yeah, Jack was there and he put it in. And it, you know, brought in Batty and Sherwood and Tim Flowers. They're the players that they need. They need good players, but they're not. They're just shelling out. And, you know, the longer the Venkies are there, the worse that club's going to get. And it's sorry to say that.
And the gates are falling apart as well. The attendances are slumping. We're talking Blackburn, we're talking money. A cheeky question from a reader for you is, did you ever lend Colin Hendry any money?
No, I'm glad I didn't have it. It's a share of alcohol, because tell you, I mean, bloody hell. From going from where it was when I used to play the Colt, you know, we were solid as a partnership there at Blackburn, and we had a great understanding. And then obviously, you know, Colt went on to Rangers, I went on to United, then he went to City, and everything was rolling. And then obviously, you know, the stuff that happened with Denise, you know, his wife, God bless her. You know, it just goes to show you just never know what's going to happen, what's around the corner. You know, something so trivial of an operation, the next minute she's really, really bad, she's struggling, and unfortunately, you know, she passed away. And nobody could ever say, you know, Colin did the right thing, Colin did the wrong thing, or anything like that, because unless you've been in that situation, you'll never, ever know what Colin went through. But the good thing is, you know, he's got four great kids, and, you know, hopefully he's turned his life around, and he's back on the good road now to recovery. And like I say, Colin's a great lad, and I do have a lot of time for him.
Football. The fortunes can change so quickly. In the next United We Stand, we've got an interview with a lad called Fabian Brandy. He's not done an interview before. And in 2007, he was the main lad in the team of Cleverley and Welbeck. I travelled out of Walsall with him a couple of weeks ago, and his story is fascinating, how low he fell and who picked him up when he was at the bottom. And he's a sir, and he spends most days working at Carrington. And I don't want to spoil the story, because I've spent the last 2 days writing it up, but just fascinating that this lad, what happened and how low he went, and you know, things are looking good for him again, thankfully. But there's times in football where there's nobody to pick you up, there's not a support network, and you're just by yourself.
Yeah. There's a statistic going on that, you know, after players, they leave football now, get bankrupt within 5 years, is it?
Yeah.
And then the divorce rate is one of the highest in the working industry. And it's like you say, I mean, people will always pipe on and probably have a little bit of a point of saying, well, you know, they earn this, that, the other, and all that. But I tell you what, it's like winning the lottery playing football. It is like winning the lottery. You're giving a hell of a lot of money overnight and you become instantly famous. And it is like winning a £110 million lotto because you think, shit, what do I do now? You have all the friends hanging around you. You have everybody hanging around you wanting to be your friend, to come out of the closet. You have people sending letters, saying about their stories. And the amount of pressure you're under, you think, right, well, I'll do that. And then it all stops. And you're left then with all the money, and you try to work out your life, because you finished at 34, 35. And yeah, you might have a few quid in the bank, but that's got to carry you through to the rest of your life. And it's that boredom that then sets in. And then you start carrying on thinking, oh, well, I can do that, because I've got a million in the bank, 2 million, 5 million, whatever it is. And eventually it dwindles away. And obviously, you know, you get bad advice to start shelling out on certain things. And, you know, if you're not careful, you can go down that way. And as you say, there's not a lot of people there that can pick you up. But it's a very, very hard learning curve being a footballer and then having to think, right, what do I do now? Because that day from going in training day in, day out, yeah, you have your close season, but you're always looking forward to pre-season, getting back with the lads, having a crack. And then when that's taken away from, I remember leaving United, thinking, fuck, what do I do now? I remember driving down out of town and thinking, wow, that's me, I'm done, what do I do? And I went on the piss, mate. I went on the piss for 10 days in Manchester. The lads had played Everton away, won the league at Everton. Remember watching it, weren't in the squad, weren't part of it. And I went to the party afterwards.
Living room.
To the living room. And then I remember leaving there, had a plenty of drink. I remember sitting on a park bench with a bottle of Krug champagne with a tramp and the pair of us swigging out of this bottle of champagne. I'm thinking, fuck me, is this it? Is this my life now, swigging a bottle of Krug champagne with a tramp? And the apartment was at the back of the living room at the time. And I thought, what do I do now? And I just went on a 10-day bender. Didn't come home. The missus ringing me, what are you doing? Just need time on my own. Get me head around it. Because you never think it'll happen. But it does. And that's what I'm saying. I can handle it.
Football.
And I went home, said all my sorries and stuff. And then luckily, you know, I had a good wife. He said, listen, you'll be fine. We'll be fine. And we were.
Football lends itself to disappointment. People see the big stars, the headline names. They don't see what goes on behind the scenes. We mentioned Michael Appleton before.
Yeah.
He had so many lows before he qualified as a coach. He had his career ended. He had a massive payout. He got badly diagnosed. His career was ended because of that. His best friend is my cousin Paul. Paul was at United as a 16-year-old. And I really like the fact that they're both best mates. Paul, injury, went to Coventry City, did his cruciate, did his other cruciate, and he started gambling. He got in a real mess. He said he became a really bitter person. He hated football. He said it took him 10 years and a mountain of debt before he had his eureka moment when his little girl opened up a letter she shouldn't have done and passed it to his wife, and she opened it and saw that it was in a load of debt we hadn't told her about. And she basically said, I'll stick with you if we work together and get out of this. And he qualified as a fireman and he's got his life back on track. And just said, at 16, he said, you know, you're playing for Man United, everything's great.
Yeah.
And then you see some of your mates go off and earn a fortune, but still have massive highs and lows. And then your own life at 19, you just washed up and everyone's saying to you, oh, you'll be all right. The same things which don't really mean anything because you're not all right because you're in a mess. And you've got no qualifications because you put everything into football.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree with you. It is. And do you know what? It is a big issue. It is a massive issue in football. It is, because you think of all the lads who make it, and like you say, go on to do really well for themselves, earn plenty of money. You don't have to be in the Premiership to earn decent money. You know, you can be in League One and earn 10, 15 grand a week, 20 grand a week. And so, you know, still a hell of a lot of money. But then, you know, if you make it into the first team in the Premier League, the average must be 50, 60 grand a week now.
But even that causes problems. I know one lad whose missus got the ump because he wouldn't buy her parents a new house. You know? It's like jealousy on so many different levels.
Yeah. Well, that's why you've got to work with your missus, aren't you? That's an absolute joke. But it's right. It's right. Why are you getting your mum and dad something when you can't get my mum and dad something? Well, and it is. Money is the root to a lot of problems.
And the bad advice, I've seen so many lads getting offered terrible advice by people who pretend to be the mates, financial advisors. The next thing, they just put money into just a madcap idea that a rational person just wouldn't go anywhere near.
No.
We've only got 10 more minutes left. I've got a couple of questions I want to work through from readers, changing the tone a little bit. Does the 1999 Champions League medal mean as much to you as the 1999 FA Cup final medal?
No. Certainly not. Never kicked a ball in that. But, do you know what? It's funny because I get asked loads of times about 99 and the celebrations and all that. And yeah, I absolutely loved my time celebrating that. But to be truthful, I never got a Premier League medal that year, and I'd much rather have a Premier League medal than a European Cup medal. Because at least I helped United win the league that year, albeit only 5 or 6 games, whatever it was. That was my contribution towards it. You know, had we lost one of those games, those last 5 or 6 games, we wouldn't have won the league, wouldn't have won the treble. Maybe, you know, you go back to 94, 95 against Everton, might have lost the cup final against Newcastle, it's all about momentum, and then you think, right. But, yeah, my FA Cup medal, and I would love to have had a Premier League medal.
Should eggs be allowed on pizza? That's the next question.
Who's asking that?
A reader.
Fucking, do they have lives, these people? yes, definitely, because my missus has the Fiorentina Pizza Express, and that's got an egg on it.
Jeans,
and it's done, and it's yolky. If it's too far done, then no, certainly not.
Jeans and jacket combination, cool or sad as fuck?
Jeans and jacket, what sort of jacket?
Don't know. I'd imagine like a blazer jacket.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah. Maybe a little bit. Everybody seems to wear it now, so maybe it's past its sell-by date. But yeah, still cool.
Here's another reader. He said, I saw David in the Deansgate need a crown a few weeks ago, getting mithered to death by a group of Scandinavian Reds while he was out having a pint with a couple of mates. He was charm personified. Can you ask him if it was true that he was laughing and joking on the flight home from Gothenburg in 94 after having a nightmare against Jesper Blomqvist? I appreciate he was played out of position. I remember that particular rumour doing the rounds at the time.
Yes, nope. I was in the Deansgate.
But the question is, were you laughing and joking on the way back from Gothenburg? That was a rumour.
That was a rumour, certainly not. God, no. Jesper was. Jesper was laughing all the way back to his Scandinavian house. maybe that performance has just got me a move to Old Trafford, which in later years actually happened. So me and Jesper still joke about it. We still laugh our heads off about it. And I still say to him, hey, I always say to him, remember, I got you the transfer to United.
Jesper was doing national service, living in a forest 2 months before that game.
So there you go. That's maybe what we should do as well. For the pre-season, doing that, bit of national service.
Have you been back to Gothenburg, or is it still too soon? Another reader wants to know.
I've not been back to Gothenburg, but Gothenburg is a great city. It's a great night out.
Who was your worst-dressed teammate?
Palace. Probably without a doubt.
Everyone says that. What sort of things did he wear? Someone said that he once came in with his wife's leather jacket on.
Say that again, mate.
Someone said he once came in with his wife's leather jacket on.
That's what I was just going to mention. He came in with like a three-quarter length Versace leather jacket, and it just looked like Mary's his wife, and he got absolutely ripped a bit.
But Pally's six foot three, and Mary's not.
Pardon?
So he's twice the size of his wife.
I know, but for some reason, well, maybe it was a full-length leather jacket for Mary, but it ended up as a three-quarter for Pally.
Another question. Is it true you flushed Dennis Irwin's kid's goldfish down the loo after a drunken night gone wrong? I think that's got to be a black question.
That's a black. Dennis never had fish.
Does it help to have played fullback to be a pundit on MUTV with yourself, Dennis, Arthur, Clayton and Viv Anderson?
I know the pitfalls of being a fullback. I mean, the thing is, when I was a Blackburn player fullback, it was one of the problems because they had Stuart Ripley in front of me. And Stuart always used to double back. I suppose it would have been the same with Bex being there. But at the time, I had Andre in front of me. And, you know, you could ask Andre anything in English and he'd answer it. But yet you ask him to come back and he wouldn't understand you. And Parks used to say to me, don't even attempt to get him back because he won't fucking understand. He won't listen to you. You're on your own.
Next question is, the Porto goal, being picked ahead of Bruce for the 96 Cup final, or a Champions League medal? Which is the best?
Get it for the FA Cup final.
Does your mum still clean for you, asks another person. I read that in an early Manchester United magazine.
Certainly not. No chance. I do it all now. Or the shirt. But I don't have a cleaner. Not a chance. Not in this day and age. Can't afford it.
Another person writes in, I love hearing that Fergie had a go at David for losing his position after the infamous Palace away game in January 95, even though he'd scored and Eric had jumped into the crowd. Is that true?
Yeah, I got the blame for the goal. He asked me why I wasn't marking Southgate because he scored the equaliser.
So he was going mad at you in the dressing room despite that happening?
The gaffer had got me. He said, where the fucking hell was you? And Southgate scored. He said, I wasn't marking Southgate. Who's marking Southgate? And fucking Eric was at the corner in his blazer and tie.
Brilliant. Who will win the Manchester derby next week?
United.
Why are United doing so well this season?
Because we've been the most consistent. We've ground out results. Whenever we've looked like we've been getting beat, we've always managed to get something back. Van Persie's made a massive difference scoring the goals. And the form of the goalkeeper, David De Gea, I think he's been fantastic this year.
There's rumours about him, Spain, Madrid and Barcelona as their future goalkeeper because Valdez looks like he's going and Casillas is 31 and he's the standout young Spanish keeper.
Do you think he'll go?
I think it would be very, very tempting if Real Madrid came in for him. But I don't think it's a money thing. They can pay top level, they can pay more than United. But you're basically saying to a lad, come back to your home city and be with where your family is. And it's Real Madrid. I think that would be exceptionally tempting. However, there's a slight thing with, because he played for Atletico. But I think that's lessened by his time playing away. With Barcelona, it's Barcelona, isn't it? I mean, how would you have felt if Barcelona would have come in for you when you played at United? You'd weigh it up, wouldn't you? You'd think about it.
Of course you would.
But I think he's genuinely happy in Manchester. I think he's happy with his progress. People in Spain are starting to realise that he's top level. You don't want that Ronaldo factor where he becomes, you know, the standout best goalkeeper in the world and Madrid just pay daft money for him to replace Casillas, because Casillas is probably the most important man in that dressing room. He's the club captain, he's the captain of his country, the World Cup winner, and it's a big position at Real Madrid, and there's not many people who can replace that. And fast forward in 4 or 5 years when he's probably going to step down, David De Gea is probably going to be the best goalkeeper in the world.
Of course he will. Definitely. He's a fantastic goalkeeper. I mean, I've stood by him all along. Never ever criticised him. Because he's only 20. You know, imagine him in 7 or 8 years. Jesus.
He's going to be brilliant. Yeah. And, you know, he's moved to another country where he doesn't speak the language. He's bound to have...
culture, everything.
Yeah.
Nick's donuts.
From that's his way of hitting back against the fat cats who run big companies. Because he didn't rob them from a small shop. I think he got them in Tesco's in Altrincham. So that was his stand against capitalism. Someone else said, you supported City as a kid. Do you still have any feelings for them whatsoever?
No.
All United.
As soon as I joined United, that was it. My allegiance has changed 100%, and they always will be.
Who was the biggest prankster in the dressing room at United, apart from you?
Butty and Giggsy. They were always at it.
What did Giggsy do? Because I've heard all Butty's ones. What did Giggsy used to do?
Giggsy was the instigator with the young lads. Making them dance and so like the team. I think it used to, either the, when the young kids used to come in, you'd get them into the dressing room, he'd make them perform, whether it was fucking shagging on the table or chatting a broom handle up or a mop, anything like that. Giggsy would be the instigator. Very funny. Very, very funny.
Two lads who always mention you in interviews, Diego Forlán and Jordi Cruyff.
Yeah, bastardos.
Where are they now? There's a question for you.
Jordi's still in Greece, is it?
Nope.
Cyprus?
Nope.
Malta?
Nope. You're about...
Where has he gone to?
He's gone to Tel Aviv in Israel, and he's the sporting director, and he's doing really well.
Do you know what? I'd have got to eventually, because I texted him to see if he wanted to play in the Masters a few months ago.
And I'd let me predict the reply. I'd love to, but my knee's gone.
Yeah.
And Diego?
Diego, you did something on Diego the other week, didn't you?
Yeah.
What's Diego now? Go on.
Brazil.
Is he really?
Yeah. We've just signed him up as a columnist for 442 because he's going to... got some nice sport. He's playing for Internacional of Porto Alegre.
Fantastic.
And he's...
How old is Diego now?
He will be 33, I think.
33.
He's still playing for Uruguay. And he went to Inter because there's money in Brazil now. They offered him the same contract as Inter Milan were paying him, which was top level. So he's on good money.
Brilliant. Good lad, Diego. I like Jordi.
Yeah, he's a. They're both absolutely sound. They both had very interesting lives, and they're both in football and doing all right.
Brilliant.
Thank you for your time, David.
You're welcome, mate.
And what are your plans for the future? You're just going to keep playing Masters, keep yourself as fit as possible, doing the golf, doing the punditry stuff. You enjoying life?
Do the punditry stuff, yeah. Try and get a little bit more of that if I can do. Generally, just enjoy life. Keep playing golf. Keep enjoying life and watching United be more successful and winning things, Tom.
Winning the 20th title.
Oh, happy days. Happy days. Come back when you've won 20 now. We can get in there.
So that's it for this episode of the United We Stand podcast. We'll be back next week with another interesting guest. We're just finishing off the latest issue of United We Stand as well, number 227, which will be out against City. You'll be able to subscribe by going to uwsonline.com. It's got Michael Carrick on the front cover. You may have seen it around the social media network. So make sure you subscribe. We've got loads of people putting hundreds of hours into each issue. And we need your support. We need you to buy the mag. Either printed edition outside the ground, where we've kept the price at the same for 7 years now, or you can subscribe digitally as well. And we've just launched an app for the Kindle Fire, whatever that means, and you can get it on iTunes as well. But we always prefer people to buy the printed issue. Until next week, goodbye.